Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who continues to build his case against UT Parking and Transportation, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
We've had many a conversation on this podcast when the players expressed their disdain in Bijan in the offseason. We obviously know about Ajay Hall. Now Quinn Ewers getting towed during a game. I can only think it was Hudson Card's quarterback coach moonlighting as a PT. I'm kidding. Maybe someone who didn't like the first drive. Sark mentioned it in his presser. Quinn parked in the wrong spot. That's those growing mistakes we talk about with a freshman. You gotta learn. You gotta respond. We'll see how he responds next week if he parks in the right spot. Looked like Keelan Robinson also got a ticket, at least during the game, according to his social media. So, PTS continues to be the bane of all, the one thing that can unite all groups on campus.
It seems wild to me that parking and transportation, he should have parked in the right spot, but, like, it feels like the rules change constantly. Like, I didn't live in Jester, but, like, somebody parking in Jester parking when I was there, like, had to move their car by 1 a.m. on Friday nights of game nights. It was, like, all sorts of dumb rules. And, like, I'm just assuming that it was something like that because it's always something like that. But, nothing is really able to unite the fan base like anti-parking and transportation takes. And so we got another one this week following Texas's big win over ULM, 52-10. Quinn Ewers was towed while performing quite well in that game. So we'll talk about that. We'll break that down. We've got some a quick rundown of the state of the Big 12 and what happened in the opening week. We'll obviously down the 40 some news we didn't get to talk about last week. We'll talk about beach volleyball. We're excited, and we'll obviously close the show out with some bang the drum. So, Kyle, I'm going to be honest with you. Maybe it's just a little bit of PTSD based upon Maryland openers or other random games in which Texas should win handily but doesn't manage to do so. I spent a lot of my Saturday evening waiting for the other shoe to drop and waiting for things to get weird. And it never did. Like we talked about last week, Texas was a big favorite and managed to somehow cover a 40-point spread, beating ULM 52-10 en route to a convincing season-opening win. That first drive looked a little sketchy offensively, but overall, Texas looked good, did what they needed to do against an opponent that they should beat handily, right?
Yeah, I mean, right, zoom out, Texas won big, not a lot of no real injuries of note. Have some guys coming back from, in this one, some guys coming back next week from off-season injuries, so that's good. Got the ones, the twos, the threes in. I mean, when we gave our predictions and said what we wanted to see, I think both you and I basically said that, right? Like, let's cycle, get the ones in, have them look good enough we can get them out, get the twos in, get some tape, and heck, if we're doing well enough, let's see some threes and further down the depth chart. I think we said that, right? Texas had 76 players play in this game. There was a lot of people on the field, a lot of young players, right? A lot of players, we'd heard their names, got game time, got out there. This was a good chance. It's exactly what we wanted from this game. And again, no major injuries. Sark said in his presser, and I think you and I said it in our initial immediate post-game react. If you're not checking that out, I don't know what you're doing with your Saturday nights, but
what are you doing?
But check it out. But there were some things to work on, right? It's almost, we've said on this podcast many times over the years, it's great to get a really dominant win that still gives the coach some things that he can, you know, put on a whiteboard and still yell a little bit about, right? Because you have Bama coming in and you're going to need to execute and perform almost flawlessly if you want to win that game next week, and we'll preview that. But ultimately, you know, good. If we want to talk just about Ewers, I really like the way he responded. I mean, he threw an interception. We all know that. Missed on the first throw. Worthy made a good play to make it not an interception. And then he settled down a little bit, stopped trying to only hit the home runs and force the ball in, took what the defense gave him, some underneath stuff, and went 8 consecutive completions, right? He had a ball later in the game where he tried to squeeze it in to a receiver that was, you know, it was not the throw that he wanted down the field. I think it was Worthy again. And he came back immediately and hit Whittington in a tight window, you know, like between two guys with a pass you want to see, the step up in the pocket to hit Jatavion Sanders in stride for a big gain, one of the ones down the middle with that seam route. He had a lot to the outside, but I thought he responded well to some things. There's some things that, you know, weren't perfect, some things you'd want to see. Love to hit any one of those deep shots. But, you know, first start for a kid who hasn't played a meaningful game in 2 years, like, we all wanted to see how does he respond to adversary, you know, to not being the best guy in the field who never makes mistakes when stuff gets adversarial, when stuff gets tough, how do you respond? And I think he did.
Yeah, and I mean, overall, like you said it best, this is the perfect opener because Texas cruised, Texas did not have injuries, and there's stuff to coach on, right? I was rewatching the game, and that first incompletion that should have been an interception, he had Gunnar Helm wide open underneath for like 5 yards, right? Yeah. And I think Quinn Ewers later in the game takes that 5 yards. I think, and again, you and I have talked about this quite a bit. There's this penchant for some young quarterbacks to kind of revert to what made them great in high school. And Ewers, I think, did a little bit of that. And he also probably just got caught up in some of the pregame hype. And I think that was what my biggest takeaway from it. Again, we kind of just dove into the quarterback by habit, but like my biggest takeaway from this from the quarterback standpoint is that Quinn Ewers has the arm. He can make the throws. And once he's settled in, he's really willing to take what the defense is giving him. And that's what my big question was coming into the game. Is a lot of young quarterbacks, like we saw early, and we saw it a couple of times when he was trying to, he really wanted to hit that long one to X. But there were times, you know, that third, the fourth down conversion, you know, Sark talked about it in the Monday press conference. That was like the third or fourth read on that. So like being confident, comfortable enough to take the check down, which then 2 plays later hit the tight end on a designed wheel route, which praise hallelujah, like tight end wheel route with Jatavion Sanders is going to be a beautiful thing to watch for years, or at least 2 years to come, right? Like, so being able to take that check down to set up the bigger touchdown play, like that's what I wanted to see from Ewers in this game. Because I'm going to be really honest with you, against Alabama, there's those big chunk plays are not going to be there. So being willing and able to take that, again, you've got a 5-star tight end, one of the best players in the country in his class in Jatavion Sanders when he came out 2 years ago. You've got Bijan Robinson, who was one of the best players in his class, one of the, if not the best running back in the country as your other check down option, really. And so having them and his willingness to throw the ball to them when he needed was my biggest takeaway from the game offensively. It was like, okay, Ewers understands what it's going to take to win football games because the long ball is not always going to be there. They're going to play safeties over the top because they know Sark is going to want to take those deep balls. So is he willing and is he able to take 6 yards and go, again, second and four, third and four is way, way more desirable than trying to chunk it downfield and end up in a 3rd and 10 situation.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's Sark talked about both Alabama and he for Alabama probably had the game plans done in the summer. I mean, it wasn't likely that anything was going to be seen against either of their week one opponents that changed the game plan, but he still wasn't going to go out and throw everything in week one. Didn't need to, first of all. And, you know, it's a good confidence builder for Quinn to hit those checkdowns and do the things he did. But, you know, you'll imagine you'll see a little bit more. We talked about it in our immediate, both of us, our immediate kind of reaction to the play calling in this one was pretty vanilla, right? I think you will see some more downfield shots. I don't think it's going to be exclusively that, but you will see some more that aren't just, you know, Xavier Worthy beat his man on a streak and you try to get him, right? They're going to scheme some things to really get him those open looks to let Quinn get some easy ones. Not that anything will be easy next week, but, you know, I think you'll see a little bit more in the play calling going forward. But what I do like to see is that in your base package, just like Gerald said, putting the ball in the hands of Sanders and, you know, Whittington, to some extent, he had two third down conversions. He didn't have a ton. He blocked his butt off. Didn't have a ton of catches.
Captain third down.
Two third down conversions. Two of Sanders' six catches were fourth down conversions. Helm on a third down, which was his fourth read. You know, like that type of stuff is really good, right? Ewers, he did get sacked once, but the pocket held enough. He had to move a little bit in it or step up into it, and he looked good. You know, that was one of the things we'd heard about him is he could make the off-platform throws, and you saw it, right? You saw him step up into a platform as he's throwing the ball and put an absolute bullet on Sanders. You saw, you know, just some arm talent on a couple of those throws, the window, you know, through a tight window throw to Worthy. One player in the passing game, I think we talked about the biggest ones, but that I didn't necessarily have on my dance card that we would be talking about as, you know, yardage-wise, our number two receiver actually had more than Bijan just with one catch, but was Kasey Kahne, who showed a lot more speed and athleticism as our third receiver, right? Imagine that would have been Isaiah Nair had there not been an injury. And so Kahne was kind of the plug-and-play replacement, but I did not necessarily think he had that level of speed and agility. I knew he was big. I knew he could go up and get a ball, a downfield threat, but really like to see that's just another wrinkle that you can have, because teams are going to cue or really kind of keep an eye on you know, Whittington underneath on third downs. And you believe everyone in the country who has Texas on the roster now knows the name Jatavion Sanders. So you're going to need a little wrinkle from Kasey Kahne coming in or one of these other guys, right? You know Bijan's coming out of the backfield. You know they're going to try to get their backs involved. So if these other receivers and Kahne being in this game the most prevalent with his just one catch, but, you know, taking it 43 yards with his first career catch, really impressed me.
Kasey Kahne was a kid that, I'll be honest with you, in that 2021 class, it almost felt like, you know, Coach Coleman was looking to fill a spot. And Kahne was a kid that felt like a spot filler. I mean, you don't normally see Texas sign kids in the 800s unless they've got something special. Cough, cough, Xavier Red, cough, cough. So when Kasey Kahne came out and had that one reception, again, it was just one reception, but the flashes of what he's able to do and the flashes of what he can do in this offense and his ability to, you know, run for some distance. I don't know why we didn't see this coming. He's a track kid from New Orleans. So, like, we should have seen his ability to run, like, a mile away. Like, I think any kid from New Orleans can run regardless, right? They just come out of the womb running. But, you know, when we think about the wide receivers, again, you know, Jatavion Sanders, six catches, 85 yards, most receptions by a tight end since 2011, I think DJ Grant, and then most yardage since JerMichael Finley since 2007.
That's awesome.
Kyle, we've declared it dead before, but we may be able to soon officially put a nail in the coffin of the curse of JerMichael Finley. We'll see how it goes in a couple of weeks. But I think the thing that stood out to me just as much as the playmaking ability of the wide receivers, their ability to play without the ball in their hands, yeah, and create for other people, specifically Bijan. I remember it, and I tweeted about it on Bijan's touchdown run. Jordan Whittington put his man in the sidelines. Like, Jordan Whittington took his man and put him into the chains. And, like, Brennan Marion preaches this a lot. Like, the way you play without the ball in your hands shows you how much you love your teammates. And if the wide receivers are playing like that and showing that much love for Bijan and for Roshan and for these running backs, this is going to go a long way for Texas to achieving its goals this year.
Yeah, and look, you know that, you know, there's really good running backs in that room. You know they're going to try to get multiple involved. There was sets where they had two running backs back there. You know, an ode to DKR, or actually a 21 package that we might see some this
go
year.
Go, Brennan Marion, baby.
No, I love it. I truly love, you know, some go elements. Even though Quinn is not a super speedy guy, I think, you know, if they choose to fold in a little go off the RPO, that could just be a really, really nice wrinkle to the offense. But no, I think, you know, you're going to see multiple running backs. And so, yeah, these receivers, the way you get to stay on the field, and the tight ends, right? Like, let's not forget that. There were some Jatavion Sanders, I think, in addition to playing well, and Sark called it out in his presser, blocked his butt off as well. I saw Juan Davis in a couple there, Gunnar Helm in some. So, you know, the all the tight ends, and when Billingsley gets back, he, you know, it'll be expected of him as well, are going to be blocking receivers out on the edge, really make those plays from a five-yard gain to a touchdown for Bijan, right? The swing pass was created by Whittington holding that block for 8 seconds. You know, those things really matter. But I will give a little bit of credit to the offensive line, which was the only thing that everyone talked about all offseason. And again, it's ULM. You are going to be more talented than those guys. But still, like, you have so much youth. You know, the Jake Majors being the only upperclassman, or excuse me, Christian Jones being the only senior, but Jake Majors being you know, he the only other returning starter. You know, there's just a lot of youth on that line. And it wasn't as though through four quarters you just kept saying, oh, this line, oh, this is going to be a problem, oh, they're terrible. Now, there were some things you would have liked to see a little bit better, a little bit cleaner in some pockets. You know, a couple times a guy squeezed through and flushed Quinn out, or, you know, maybe Bijan with another two steps that had a seam could have had runs go even further or whatever. But I thought the line was solid, and I think that's what we all asked for, right? Like, let's not sit here and change. We all said this offseason, like, just be average, just be above average, just be solid. And I think that happened.
Yeah, and I think a lot of my attitude about the game is, like, I didn't notice those guys, which was a good thing.
Right.
Like, I had to go back and watch the offensive line to see. Yep. Like, you know, on my rewatch, I usually just watch the game holistically and then go back and rewatch and look at specific positions. And the offensive line wasn't what it was last year, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think specifically, again, this is a team that they've always been a good run blocking offense, especially with Angulau in there. Angulau's out. But, like, 5 line yards per rush, mm-hmm. statistically looking, you're shooting for 3. So they're doing okay there. And I think what was emblematic of how the offensive line may have progressed, and again, it's ULM, so it's all taken with a big old grain of salt, but on the Bijan TD, I thought back to our high school offensive line coach telling you in you know, red zone situations, make your man score a touchdown, and Christian Jones put that defender in the end zone. Like, the way that he finished, like, that is the attitude you want your offensive lineman to have. Now, Christian Jones is probably his struggles were probably more significant in the pass rushing or in the pass blocking realm last year, but if Jones has made that mental switch, and if Jones has gotten and turned the corner, and again, Texas doesn't need these guys to be A-plus all the time, because the skill players can also compensate for it. But if they can get to a B-minus, this is a team that is able and can achieve a goal that Steve Sarkisian has put out for them. And I think as we talk about what we'll talk about Bama on Thursday, right? That's not what we're talking about today. But I think as we reflect on ULM, right, Texas was able to do what Texas wanted to do without having to do a whole lot extra. Bijan did what Bijan did, 10 carries, 71 yards, 40 receiving yards, 2 total touchdowns. Like, Roshan had an early touchdown, 34 yards and a touchdown. Jonathan Brooks was the one that killed my Godzillatron. Again, it's always good to see JB2K get in, but six carries, 32 yards, and a touchdown. Our boy Jaden Blue got a little bit of shine. Keelan Robinson got a touch. Xavier Worthy had a carry as well. But again, I think the only way to describe this game is you were able to stay vanilla and you were able to dominate. And I don't feel like Texas has done that in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can really see it with the, you know, the last touchdown that went to Jonathan Brooks. There was a point they had all 5 true freshmen, or maybe a redshirt freshman, all 5 freshmen at least, playing on the 3s, right? It was not perfect, and Sark said in his presser, you know, they're all new, and there was a little bit of miscommunication at the beginning, but then it turned into a 12-play drive that ended in a touchdown, right? That is a great feeling and a great sign, like Gerald said. That's just going out and being better than your opponent. That's just winning each play. That's, you know, that's just doing the things that should be intangible to you to be the high-recruited offensive line, you know, player that you are at this level. Just go out and win. You don't have to be perfect. You are going to get beat, but just go out and win the next play. And much credit to Brooks. I'm not taking anything away. Both his touchdown, Roshan's touchdown, and Bijan's touchdown run all showed an ability to make guys miss, to you know, see the proper read, make a cut quickly, and get upfield. And I think that's what Choice is really, you know, stressing to these guys is one cut and go, and they're all pretty good at that you know, type of running. Right now, Bijan's was, you know, shrug one guy off, cut left, shift your weight back right, keep your balance, and then get in the end. I mean, it was ballet. It was so beautiful. One of his best touchdowns I've seen, just the amount of things he did in like a 3 second span of body control. But yeah, I mean, they're going to be that type of running. And I think especially when you look at some of the tough defenses coming up, Alabama included, like get upfield, get as much as you can. It doesn't have to be home runs every time. Cut, get upfield, get 6 yards, live to fight another day, right? And I think you got some running backs to do that. I do think with some of the two backs, it doesn't show up in the stat sheet as much, but Keelan created a lot of eye distraction when they went two backs or when he was coming out of the slot, even for some of the other running backs' runs. So he only had the one carry, but I thought he played really well in this game, and I think some credit goes to him. Obviously, we did in special teams, but you know the fact that he was out there creating a distraction because teams know his speed, what he can do. I think we'll see him actually get the ball a little bit more in the future going forward, though we said that all year last year. So let's see. But all in all, I agree, Gerald. Great performance with some running backs with a running. I think we are going to be a balanced team who runs the ball a lot, obviously with Bijan, but you're going to see a healthy dose of Roschon as well. He's not going anywhere. Like that's one of your captains. I think you're going to see multiple running backs get in, multiple looks, multiple types. You know, they're going to probably chip. You saw like Andre Carrick came in at tight end. They're going to have different people in, a lot of two tight ends, a lot of two backs, different things. You won't just go out with four or five wide, probably a ton, but they're going to try to get their best players on the field and help protect that offensive line and get a push on you know running plays all season. I don't think that was an anomaly. I think you're going to see that all season.
Yeah, and something that I hope we see all season, flipping to the defensive side, it felt like Texas was able to swarm and was willing to swarm more than they have in recent years. And again, it seems like a little thing, but as somebody who's been watching Texas pre the last decade and now in the last 12 years or so, that's the little things have been the big differentiators for Texas. And so the defense played fast. They played swarming. There was never really a solo tackle that I saw in this. Like they were credited as solo tackles, but there were 2, 3, 4, 5, 9 bodies around the ball carrier. And that's what you want to see from your defense, especially. And it's part of the reason why Texas had and saw so many broken tackles in years past, and why broken tackles turned into chunk plays and turned into touchdowns is because you can run through one arm tackle, but you can't run through nine. That's just how bodies work, right? That's how football works. If there's one guy, one-on-one guy, I take the offensive guy. If it's one on nine guys, I'm going to take the defense every time. And the guys leading the charge in that were DeMarvian Overshown and Baron Sorrell, who DeMarvian Overshown was all over the freaking field. Best player on the defensive side of the ball. Again, You could have a Sorrell argument, but like either one of those guys, I'm not going to argue with you. But you know, he had 8 tackles, 2 for loss, which was, you know, Texas having multiple players with multiple tackles for loss in a game. It's also a new thing we didn't see last year. And so those two guys really set the tone and the pace for Texas on the defensive side of the ball. And if you get that from them week in and week out, this week's going to be a real test. The ability of this defense to be, again, we said it preseason, we don't need you to be the best defense in the country. We just need you not to suck. And their ability to play like this gets us past not to suck, and they might be downright okay.
Whether it's year two of Kwiatkowski, whether it's Patterson's influence, whether it's guys just wanting to take a step up, whatever it is that caused it, we've seen individual players where we called out Jalen Ford last year. Wow, there's a player who's running downhill, chasing the ball, not giving up on plays, you know, and that seemed exceptional. But you really saw a hive mentality, a unit that just flowed downhill, that just, from the very first play, that just went after ball carries, went after the ball there. I mean, Keandre Coburn, a guy who's gotten his, you know, fair share of guff over the years, making a tackle on the sideline, right? Like chasing a play, a couple guys standing up, and Keandre Coburn's finishing it off on the sideline. That's, you know, 380 pounds of human being moving, you know, from the center of the field to the sideline. You like to see that, you know. It was really good. I think the Demo Edge experiment, one game, small data size, but I think we can say it's going to be good. I'm still curious to see if there's more moving him around in the course of a game that comes in other defensive sets, but just putting him on the edge and letting him rush looks pretty good. The thing that I liked about him a lot, just his energy, of course, his ability to get that initial pressure, is sometimes we've had rushers in the past who could generate a little pressure, and it created, remember OU runs like this, it created running lanes where, you know, people then got up underneath them. It felt like multiple times, multiple players, but I saw Overshown do it himself countless times, gets that initial rush, gets the block on him, and then when he's trying, he's about to do his move to try to beat the guy, he's looking at the quarterback and seeing, is a run coming underneath here? Is this quarterback who was mobile, is he going to try to step up? And shucking a guy and sliding back and closing that lane off. I saw a couple plays, they won't be counted as sacks or even tackles for loss, but where the quarterback, who again was their most dangerous weapon and is, you know, quick, got tackled for a 1 yard run where, you know, in years past, if you don't, and they had a third down conversion where he did wiggle away and do it because he's a good athlete. But if you don't make that tackle, that quarterback has 20 easy and it's a game breaker, right? Like, so that play where, you know, we had multiple guys.
TCU every year, Max Duggan.
Exactly. But multiple guys, you know, getting their initial weight downhill, putting pressure, but then also their secondary move of kind of flowing back towards the line of scrimmage and keeping that quarterback from kind of in contain mode from going too far. Those don't show up on the box score. They're just tackles, but those are, you know, half sacks in my mind, right? You stopped a bigger thing. You got a 1 yard rush when he was taking off and could have easily gotten 8 or 9. So those are big for me, and that comes with energy.
Well, and I think to your point, the play that Keandre Coburn was credited with a sack was because the defensive end set the edge. There was nothing to the outside, and the quarterback tried to go back in, but Coburn did what Coburn should do at 400 pounds and pushed the offensive lineman back into the backfield, right? So when those two things can happen simultaneously, you create a disruptive play, you create a havoc play, and the more havoc plays you create, the higher likelihood or the lower likelihood of something bad happening for you on the defense or good happening for you on the defense. So we do have to talk about the secondary again, and I don't mean to be reductive, and I'm not trying to be like cheeky here, but this felt like another game where, like, I didn't notice the defensive backs in a negative light. I did not notice that was a blown coverage. Oh, that was a bad handoff. And again, they weren't perfect. There's a lot to still coach on, but it felt like, you know, Ryan Watts did his job. Jalen Gilbo came in, did his job. Those guys came in and just played what they were supposed to. DeSean Jameson finally got to look like the versatile playmaker that he was. And Jameson, we'll talk about him again when we talk about special teams, but like that interception, that's what we've wanted to see from him his entire career. He was running with the wide receiver. They moved him, and that was a big change for him, is he moved from boundary to field, right? So he has more space. Capitalize on your speed. He showed it off. He jumped a route, and then he took it to the house because he's one of the fastest guys on the field. And with that, he became the first player in school history to have a punt return, a kick return, and an interception return for a touchdown. And he could have been a lot farther along in that journey if these types of things had changed earlier in his career.
Yeah, the 69 yards, it was a nice return, where it's also the 13th longest interception return in school history. My favorite part about it, and Jameson, great, you know, instincts, great ability to when the ball comes to you, have the hands to do it, great instant breakup field, and obviously the speed. But the guy who, you know, was near the line of scrimmage by the quarterback and turned around and sprinted and made the block that ultimately sealed him. I think, you know, maybe Jameson beats the quarterback one-on-one, but their very athletic quarterback is sprinting back to cut off the angle. And Jalen Gilbo, the freshman, who's just chomping at the bit to be a part of, you know, this defense, to take this defense a step forward, is sprinting, you know, stride for stride with Jameson, gets the kind of nick on the quarterback to send him off balance, and then Jameson dives for the end zone. And the thing that I loved is Gilbo is celebrating immediately when he makes the block as hard as Jameson when he sees him dive. He was as happy to get the block that set his teammate into the end zone as Jameson was to be scoring the touchdown. And I love that. I love that team mentality that we're seeing in our secondary. We're going to need that, right? We're going to need guys covering for each other. We're going to blow some assignments. We're going to have guys win a press. We're going to have people get open. Like, you need to be picking each other up. I think Jahdae Barron had a little bit of an ankle injury. He didn't start, but he did play, but coming into the game. And so that was what Sark credited for Gilbo getting the start. But I think you are going to see a 1A, 1B. You'll see a lot of Gilbo out there. We said he might be pushing Jameson for that cornerback spot. He's had a great camp. Ryan Watts looks like a difference maker. He looks like a cornerback. You know, we've had big cornerbacks in Chris Boyd and Holton Hill.
NFL cornerback, shocker.
Well, you know, Hill and Boyd, who both went to the NFL off that secondary, right? And both had their deficiencies, but certainly made some big plays. But that type of body of just strong, can chuck a guy, can, you know, what I really liked is there was a point Watts was inside on a short field run and you know, got downhill and made a hit, and I was like, which linebacker? Oh, that's Watts, you know, because he made all, like, everything look natural to him to get to the point of attack, spring into a tackle, deliver, you know, at the point of attack and push, you know, a ball carrier back on contact. Like, it just looked like what you see from your linebackers. So I was excited to see that. I think it's great to have that really physical presence who can, you know, just get in and you know, take a receiver out of the game, help in the run game, help, you know, limit big plays that way. So I think it's really great. We didn't see a ton from the safeties, which is a good sign. Like Gerald said, I think, you know, they shut down, especially with the early game, a lot of the you know, air for anything long. So, you know, we talked about needing complementary football. We need a rush off the edge, which helps the defensive backs. We need the defensive backs to jam some guys, to not let easy, quick, you know, three-step throws be there, take away, you know, seam routes that may have gotten us in the past. And it worked, right? We got some sacks. We didn't give up, you know, a ton in the air. I will 1,000 days of the year, that's 3 years, give 167 passing yards in a game, right? Like, if we're under 200 yards in the modern college football, I will take that every single game. I think that's fantastic. Also, not giving up 100 yards to go with it, fantastic. Like, I think the defense was great. I think Baron Sorrell really is looking like he could be that edge player we've been looking for. I hope he can continue it. All in all, the identity of the defense, if they are going to be a chase after you, you can always coach a little bit of technique. You can't coach effort. And it 100% looked like they had effort. They were playing as a unit. They were swarming. Like, I will take that all day. Make some mistakes, fine. We'll get over it if you give that effort. And I really liked what I saw through all four quarters.
Yeah, every football coach at every level has said something along the lines of, when you get into a game, I don't care if you screw up, but screw up going full speed, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's always been, I heard that going back to Pee Wee's, right? You may forget your assignment, run as hard and as fast as you can at the guy with the football, and good things might work out, right? Like, obviously we want them to play well, we want them to play the technique, but like that, the effort, right? The effort, the downhill flowing, the gang tackling, those little things, the differentiators for Texas, will continue to grow and to blossom and to be what we need Texas to be moving forward. Now, as we talk about little things, special teams, there was some good, there was some bad, there was some in between. Texas opened it up with a great special teams play. You know, held ULM to a three and out. Deshaun Jameson came up with a blocked punt. Again, another first in school history, became the first player to ever return a punt for a touchdown and block a punt. So again, great first for him. Keelan Robinson recovered it, got the easiest touchdown of his career right there. Texas was about a fingertip away, a fingernail away from its second block in the fourth quarter. But like, that was an incredible outing, and that shows the Jeff Banks difference from year to year.
Yeah, right. Like, the we look at special, I think, well, I'll say the average person who looks at special teams, because we think of everything from the scoreboard, says, how do we kick field goals? Did they go in? Right. That's the extent of special teams. And that's a portion of it for sure. Right. And we've had some fantastic kickers. There was a New York Times article, you know, this week about why Justin Tucker and how he became the greatest of all time. Right. Like, I love it. I love great kickers, but Banks, I'm sure, would be the first to tell you, in his philosophy of putting his best athletes, regardless of what side of the ball they're starting on, where they are in the depth chart, putting his best athletes on the field is paying dividends in the other areas. I think, like you called it, the getting pressure on the punts, the punt returns, even like Xavier Worthy, a little bit of a cardiac roller coaster when he's back there, right? He picked up a ball off a bounce with a crowd around him and got a 0 yard return. He had one where he, you know, reversed the field for a 70 yard run that got him 21 yards of return because he ran all the way across and back.
Ran 60 to get 20.
Yeah, but you know, it also, Worthy was like one more inch away from the sideline angle being shut down from that being a home run touchdown, right? Like, he has the game breaking. His next return on the other sideline was, you know, was good with speed that he got out of bounds, but he picked up, you know, 12, 15 yards before it, and it's a great return. So, you know, it's interesting. I think there's they can come for the ball in situations. They can stay back and block. No holding, no penalties on the special team, which is huge, right? Usually a return like that with Worthy, when someone goes back to slingshot around, you see somewhere a block in the back, a holding, because you're reversing the field. You're changing the angles, the points of attack for these blockers, and everyone did a good job of making sure they got in the way, but it's better just to be in the way for a player than try to get the block and get a penalty. did a great job. I really like that. I think, you know, on special teams coverage, they were good on punts when they got them away. On kickoffs, they were able to get down and make tackles. Overshown had a big tackle there too, right? So I think that looked good. Some handling of the football from our specialists, which we knew would be an issue, right? The holder on a field goal, Pearson on a punt slipping. I think maybe you just wanted to show off the Aussie rules football skills, because I love Pearson. I'm going to give him that benefit of the doubt. But it looked a lot like Dixon, right? We talked about that. These Australian punters, it under the lights, it's a little bit different, right? It's just a little bit different game than what they're used to. And so that will be something to watch. Field goals, there was a very clear, we went for it four times on fourth down. We got all three of them. Or excuse me, three times on fourth down. We got all three of them. But there is a point where it's like, if we had Dicker, we might go for that field goal. But currently, there isn't a confidence outside of, let's call it 46 yards, 45 yards. We're probably not going to kick that at this point in the season. And we'll see where guys develop and where Sark's, you know, the game situation, where his head is. But it is going to be a little bit different, right? We probably won't be kicking a ton of 50-yard field goals unless we absolutely have to. We probably, you know, may not kick every kickoff out of the back of the end zone like we have in years past. It's just a little bit different.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Pearson had the fumble, the kind of miss, not fumble, but like mishandle on both of those kick on both of those special teams plays as the holder and then as the punter. And again, the rugby style punt worked out. That's why you get these Australian guys in there, because, well, they can do those types of things. But I think we saw Texas make the change and put in Machete after that second kind of fumble slip from Isaac Pearson. So there may be some competition there. Sark mentioned it this week that they're going to try to clean it up. But I think that is a question you have to clean up going into Alabama, because, and we'll talk about this on Thursday, there are like three, you know, there are always four likely outcomes to a game, and two of them require you to have a successful kicker in the game. And so as we close this out, Podstradamus, Kyle, you hit on one of yours. Texas had three sacks, which, good on you. Texas didn't do that all year last year, so you definitely podstradamused that one. But you missed on Texas rushing for more than 200 yards. They finished with 134. But that's really just because they, like, you know, they pulled Bijan after 70. They pulled Roshan after, you know, things went downhill. They could have gone well. I missed on, or I hit on Texas allowing less than 20 and a half. I think I should probably get double points for that, since they'd hit half of 20 and a half. But that's another conversation for another day. And then, even though you wanted to give me credit for this, we did not hit it. Texas had three different players with a receiving touchdown. I missed on that one. So we're tied currently 1-1 in Podstradamus. We'll be back on Thursday to preview the Alabama game. We'll have obviously more Podstradamus picks for you there as well. But we're excited to bring you our next preview show on Thursday.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
One of the things we did last year, and we want to kind of do again this year, is we want to look at the Big 12 and kind of what the rest of it is as far as it impacts Texas and how it goes around. So quickly around the Big 12, starting with the earliest two games, Oklahoma State built a big first half lead, but had to have a little squeaky bum time against Central Michigan, 58-44. Pittsburgh and West Virginia in the backyard brawl. That was an absolutely insane game, but Pitt came back on a pick six from West Virginia quarterback and JT Daniels, and won that one 38-31. That might have been, like, in a game, in a week of crazy games, like, that, I feel like we should have known that the week was going to be wild, with that one being like Thursday night, like, everybody was watching it. We should have known something special was going to happen this week.
College football is back. It's beautiful. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people watched the Texas A&M game. That looked like it was not certain. Sam Houston just doesn't have the talent. They're usually a top 25 team at the FCS level. They got zero votes this year. They're just not a good team. But you could tell that if they were a more talented FCS team, they could have given Aggie some trouble. So I think maybe that number next to Aggie's name will grow for sure, as they also blood in a freshman quarterback. Probably a lot of people watched that one and saw BJ Foster get an interception against the Aggies. So good on him. You know, the NC State game, though they're not an opponent on our schedule or the Big 12, I did in my season preview predict a Cheez-It Bowl versus NC State when they struggled a little bit from being overrated. They, which I think they're a good team, but 13 is a you know, low number. They almost lost to East Carolina, basically a wild one in that one where they just, you know, missed a field goal at the end, but had multiple crazy things. That UNC Mac Brown App State game, just stupid wild basketball score going back and forth. The fourth quarter of that one was nuts. Arkansas, I was curious to see how good they would be this year just because they were on our schedule last year. They beat the darling Cincinnati, who it shows, right? When you're not these elite teams, you can be in the playoff one year and it just takes a cycle or two to reload for most teams, right? Cincinnati looks like they're going to be a bit down, but Arkansas looks pretty good. I did think UTEP gave OU a little bit of trouble in the first half. UTSA, who's coming up on our schedule, gave Houston everything they could handle. I think they're both good teams. I think, you know, UTSA is going to be a Big 12 level team. I'll say that. Like, I don't know if they are a top 25 team necessarily. They could sneak in there, maybe depending on their schedule, but they are going to be as tough as pretty much most of the Big 12 teams on our schedule. So it's certainly not one to overlook. Georgia looks like they're a world better than everyone else. And yeah, I mean, even the Lincoln Riley experiment, Rice did some things early on against USC to make that one a little bit interesting. So Texas having just a no, you know, stress game when a lot of teams did, you know, I think it's great. Like, I was watching side by side with the Ohio State Notre Dame at the same time, and Notre Dame looked like they were, you know, had a chance in the first half of that one of getting the upset. So, everyone in week one, you know, it's just a reminder. We all live through Maryland. We live through those things. It's always crazy. But if I'm probably the most upset with a win fan base in the country for me out of week one is Oklahoma State. When you let that much of a comeback to Central Michigan, who has an experienced running back, right? Last year's leading rusher, but they don't have a whole lot outside of that. And they were able to throw the ball on them. Like, it just, you got a lot to work on that defense when that was the strength of your team last year. So those Spencer Sanders looked great against a weak CMU defense. I think you definitely have some questions about where Derek Mason and your new defense is going to be.
Jim Knowles ain't walking through that door. Around the rest of the Big 12, Kansas took care of Tennessee Tech 56-10. The drive for three continues. TCU handled Colorado 38-13. Iowa State beat up on SEMO 42-10. You mentioned Oklahoma on top of UTEP 45-13. Kansas State all over South Dakota State 34-0. Baylor 69-10 against Albany. Like, that is, we won't make any jokes about Baylor, but just think about that one. Texas Tech on Murray State 63-10, and then obviously Texas 52-10. The Big 12 outside of you know, those first two Thursday night games, and those Thursday night games are always weird, right? But like, the Big 12 was really arguably one of the most solid conferences out there, going, you know, 9-1 with the one being a tight game. It honestly would have been a candidate for the game of the week, if not the rest of the weekend happening, and so many incredible games happening. So obviously we'll whip around the Big 12 continually, but all in all, it's going to be an interesting year in the Big 12. So now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. The big story, Kyle, the big story. Number one, volleyball continues to march through the rest of the country and the rest of the top 15 like a hot knife through butter, dominating number 12 Stanford, a 3-0 sweep to improve to 4-0 overall. All of those are top 12 wins. And in a year where we think Texas is going to be good at a lot of sports, it seems like volleyball is setting the pace and setting the tone early and often.
I don't know if there's been enough eyes, enough praise, enough attention paid to Zoe Fleck coming in as the libero on this team. You know, we knew she was going to be good. She was a preseason All Big 12. She was all conference, at least, if not all American previously, before she transferred in. She looks like one of the best defensive players in the country. There's just balls that find a way to the floor in years past. And though we bring in Skinner, who's, you know, elite, and we bring in some backline players and a lot of talent. I mean, a really great setter from Utah. Like, we've brought in a ton of talent to supplement a really good team already. Fleck was named the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Week, and she really should be getting national honors. I mean, she had against Minnesota, she just short of the all-time Longhorn record set by Kat McCoy in 2016 for digs in a single match, right? Like, she had 26 digs in a match. She just, she's just really, really, really good. And I think it allows Texas to do a lot of things with her in there. And again, there's probably 10 players who you could name who had a big moment, a big play in these past few opening matches. But Texas bit off one of the most, probably the toughest schedule in the country to open the season. Went out of conference, Big Ten, out to California to play a ranked Stanford, had Minnesota at home, but still a top 10 Big Ten team. Like, they aren't backing down from anyone, and I think they rightfully look like the best team in the country.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, like, a lot of transfer players had some big moments. Sage Gahaina Aina Torres had 11 digs in that matchup. The reload and the rebuild of the roster, Jared Elliott seems to, we had questions about how it would work out, and Jared Elliott seems to unsurprisingly have hit the nail on the head and done what he needed to do for Texas to be successful. Speaking of doing what Texas needs to be successful, we talked about this briefly last week with our friend Brett when we talked about Director's Cup dates, but the man, Podstradamus himself, is honestly at this point, we're going to start calling him, but he said that it would be smart for Texas to add beach volleyball as an easy intercollegiate additional school to pad the Director's Cup rankings. And well, 36 hours after we recorded that, Texas announced that they were adding beach volleyball as sport number 21. Beach volleyball itself is a relatively new NCAA sport, only been competing for championships for about 6 years now, six seasons of championship competition there.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned on the pod, right? Del Conte got that program started at TCU. TCU became a power in that pretty quickly. I think we've heard that there's going to be some synergy between this and the volleyball team we just talked about, right? The indoor volleyball. And I will never, I hope beach volleyball really catches on and is great, but nothing will ever replace, the volleyball team in Gregory just as the best atmosphere on campus. But I'm excited to go to a beach volleyball game, like, for support UT. I think that would be fun, right? Like, it's just gonna be great, and I think pretty instantly Texas will become a player in that field just because they are one of the blue bloods all-time volleyball powerhouses. And when you think about the region, like the general South, especially in Texas, in the center of the country, they are the volleyball school. They control a large swath of the country. They're going to get some great players and have some great insight. They brought in two coaches on the staff who are from California, at the beachiest schools in the country. So they already seem ready to have that, as we would say in the business world, OC about beach volleyball. And I think they will be I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with very quickly.
So Texas will play like a limited schedule in 2023 and then kind of get their full schedule going. It's a fully sanctioned team in 2024. Soccer continues to have a strong start to the season, improving to 3-1-1 on the year. Went out to Eugene and tied them 1-1, a good squad there, and then came from behind to beat Gonzaga 3-2 to close out their little West Coast two-step.
Yeah, it was two different games, right? Against Oregon, they controlled the game and just couldn't get the winner. They 18-6 outshot the Ducks, but the Ducks were able to sneak one in towards the end of the game to equalize, and Texas really couldn't ever get that second goal against Gonzaga. Gonzaga got up early, 2-0, and Texas had to fight back and score the next three goals. Really, really valiant effort from them. Trinity Byers, good. She's been back, pretty much. She came back in the North Carolina game, but had no practice time with the team, basically, from her international duty. So it seems like she's really settling in, getting good, kind of rhythm with her teammates, now leads the team in goals. She had the opening goal against Gonzaga. Lizzie Warden, the freshman who's kind of taking a spot and making it hers on the team the way Missimo and Byers did last year. And then MJ Cox, who had her second match winner of the season, coming from deeper in the midfield. I think it's great. Like there's a lot of names, a lot of weapons. Your only loss this year is to the number one team in the country. So, I mean, they're a really young team with a lot of their upfront play and weapons. And I think by the end of the season, they should be really sharpened into a dangerous team you don't want to face.
Yeah, Texas, again, continues to build, and that's going to be a squad that hopefully can score some Director's Cup points for the Longhorns as the season closes out. Speaking of a team that Brett mentioned that needs to get some Director's Cup points, Cross Country swept the Tornado Watch Invitational for the second year in a row, getting that season off to a hot start, including some young runners setting the pace for Texas.
Yeah, sophomore Isaac Alonzo getting there, winning the men's 5K. Beth Ramos, who you'll remember was the lone competitor sent to nationals last year on the women's side, won the women's 5K. They basically, you know, this is kicking it off, getting started. They'll split up the teams in 3 weeks when they compete again. The women heading to Eugene, Oregon, and the men heading to Stillwater for the Cowboy Jamboree that weekend of September 23rd and 24th. There is a new coach, of course, for the cross country team, and I, you know, it was curious to see how they would handle kind of a late replacement there, but they seem to have literally, I'm going to use a pun here, and it is intended, hit the ground running.
Nice. Oklahoma State, sneaky good cross-country squad there. And then finally, the football team for on the recruiting side added its third piece to the 2024 class, four-star Hunter Modon out of Clear Lake in the Houston area, number 113 overall, number 13 player in the state of Texas.
Yeah, looks like a specimen. You just watch the tape on him. He's big body, looks like he could be that outside receiver. 2024, I believe, means, you know, their juniors this year just starting. And so his tape that you saw when he committed was mainly his sophomore year. And so as a sophomore who's already contributing on a varsity team, right, you can see why that guy may take a play off on a running play. But with what I really liked from his tape was Modin was, again, as a could be a big man on campus, go to your head, you know, best receiver on your team as a sophomore, was out there blocking his tail off. And I love seeing that. We just talked about that's what Coach Marion looks for. I believe his first offer was actually from Marion while he was still at Pittsburgh. So a guy that Marion has, you know, targeted pretty quickly and early and said it's his type of player and his type of guy who can both make plays and help create plays for others. I think it's a great fit and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, he's one of those multi-sport stars. He does track kid, a sprint relay kid. I think he also plays basketball, maybe. So, like, he's, again, a multi-sport kid, long jumper, so he's explosive. But he's a guy that, again, I think when Texas is loading the cupboard and kind of loading the barrel for the Big 12, for the SEC, and he's the kind of kid that can really be a dominant player. He's one of those guys that Sark likes to have. He, honestly, is very much in the Casey Kane mold. Again, more heralded than Casey Kane coming out, but a big kid who's faster than he should be at that size. Now's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, I feel like I'm swerving a little bit into your lane with this one because I know how you have a very well-established opinion about the Big 12, and I'll let you, or excuse me, about the NCAA, but equally inept institutions, but about the NCAA and whether it should continue to exist in the future. But there was, you know, it feels like we've had these every couple months lately, but a ground shifting kind of announcement that came out this week, the College Football Playoff committee announcing they will officially be expanding to 12 teams. Right. And it felt like a lot of people saw this coming. Most people agreed with it. I was surprised to see the number of people who were against it, but anyways, it felt like, you know, there was a lot of pettiness and territorial squabbling that maybe kept this from happening initially. And then basically money speaks and the College Football Playoff CEO and those decision makers on that side just took control and said, nope, this is what we're going to do. And basically, right, you've gotten to a point where the playoff, interestingly, better than the BCS system, if you will, you know, in the 100-some-odd, 50 years of college football, only the past really 30 have tried to say this is who the outright winner is. I mean, look at A&M and even Alabama to some extent. You know, they love to claim a national title. There's been disputed things, and to try to get around that, they've solidified it, right? And first it was BCS, and the computers weren't as good as they should have been then. Now they've gone to a playoff, and we saw some flaws. So this is the next iteration, and this one really makes sense. And there were some things in this that I really liked and I think are great. There's some couple tweaks, you know, I hope they get to. But going to 12 teams, the top four will get a bye. So basically your four best SEC teams. I kid. But your top four will get a bye. And my favorite part about it is they are going to be playing some of these games, opening round games, on campus or at times at neutral sites, but bringing it on campus, like, which is just will be such a cool atmosphere and experience, right? Imagine a bowl game and Texas makes whatever bowl, but it's played at home. Like, it's exciting. People get up for it. I think it's going to be really exciting. There are those who don't like necessarily the what it does to the regular season. It makes the season longer. I understand, and there can be tweaks. I get it, but I think all in all, this is a huge win, and a huge step forward. Right, that we spent the entire offseason belly aching that college football is dead. We're paying players, NIL, SEC expansion. Everything's wrong. It's bad. It's terrible. And what did we all do? We all just spent, you know, 96, am I doing my math right, hours, however many, Thursday to Monday, I guess, honestly, when we're recording this, still Clemson going. Is playing, but glued to the TV, and football has been good. I mean, good in the way that you miss an extra point getting blocked and lose after a 98-yard drive, like that college football kind of good. Like, it's dumb and stupid, but I love it, and it's beautiful. It has been a perfect college football weekend, honestly. Like, this has been great. And so, like, all the belly aching, it's like, oh, We'll keep adapting. We'll make it work. It'll still be great. I'm happy with this. And honestly, I think everyone probably should be.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned it, like, the BCS was the first time that there was really an established and codified college football champion. And that came around in 1998. Like, we act like there's this, and again, college football is all about mythology and all about history and rivalries. That's why the backyard brawl was so fun. And college football is changing, yes, but like, there is an opportunity to create something cleaner. And again, if the playoff is killing, air quotes, college football for you, then quit watching ESPN coverage, right? Just go watch the games. Don't worry about the pregame show. Don't worry about, because that's really what it is. And so part of, like, what I would love to see in this is, like, changing who covers the national championship every year, because ESPN does that because they have the exclusive rights to it. So they gain quite a bit from us all just talking about the championship. But when push comes to shove, the argument is like, well, there aren't 12 teams that are capable of winning a national championship every year. There aren't 128 NCAA basketball teams either, but we all shut down for March to watch that tournament. So, like, I love college football, and I am so excited for this. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be interesting. And again, if Texas squeaks in at 12 and gets in the playoff, you bet your hiney that I'm going to beat my chest that Texas is a playoff team, because 1 or 12 doesn't matter. In is in. And so I'm so excited to see this. I'm banging the drum this week on staying above the fray. I talk a lot about social media and how Texas fans act on social media. And this is going to be, of all of the dumb weeks for Texas fans on the Twitter bot and on social media in general, this potentially is going to be the dumbest. Because everybody is watching this game. Everybody has a take about this game. Baylor fans are pissy because ESPN, for some reason, decided not to go to Provo, Utah. Who's wanted to go to Provo, Utah to cover a game? Not a lot of people in a long time have wanted to do that. And so there's that, like, there's this ranked game over here, and why are they going to Alabama and Texas and Austin? Because it's Alabama and freaking Texas, right? Like, get over yourself. You're not that big of a deal. But, like, I sit here and I think about all of the other conversations that are happening. Whatever the outcome of the game, if Texas doesn't win this thing on Saturday, it's going to be dumb. And so I'm inviting you to try to stay above the fray, right? Go into this with the right set of expectations, go into this with the right mindset, and understand that, and Steve Sarkisian said it on Monday, the goal for this season was a Big 12 championship. The goal for the season is to play in December. And whatever happens against Alabama does not impact that goal. So try to stay above the fray. Don't let the trolls from A&M get into you. They're going to feast on another FCS opponent because they feast on the carcasses of the damned each and every week until they get to SEC play. And then they lose four games. And that's fine. That's what they do. They're going to bang their chests on winning four SEC games a year. Let them do it. It's fine. Like, stay above the fray. OU fans are going to try to poke you on it. Whatever. They're going to go play Sisters of the Poor on Sooner Vision. Nobody's going to be able to see it. Like, just stay above the fray. It doesn't matter. The college football world is looking at Austin for a reason, right? And that the Alabama Crimson Tide, the best team in the country, in the world of college football, in sports period, for the last decade, is coming to one of the most storied programs in the country, and in college football. Even in the worst years, Texas draws more than any other school. And it is what it is. It is Texas, eliminated from bowl contention, drew more eyes, six times the eyes, than the Baylor Bears, who were on the verge of playing for a conference championship in week 13 last year. There's a reason why they're coming to Austin. Stay above the fray. Don't get drawn down in the muckraking and BS that's going to happen, and just enjoy whatever happens on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama is almost an underdog the way opposing fan bases are rallying to support them in this game. Like, it's wild. It's wild, I'm sure, for Alabama fans. Like, where? Why do we have all of these allies? Why are, you know, Baylor fans and Tech fans and OU fans, like, why are all these people hyping us up in the mentions? It's got to be a surreal experience for them. But yeah, I'm so glad that ESPN was not lured into covering the, I think we're going to call it the Unethical Bowl, right? I've seen some other names bandied about. I won't tip what any specific writer at BON may have titled the Bigot Bowl, but it's fine. I'm glad they're coming to Texas, to Austin. If Texas is truly, you know, an unranked team, which they have the talent to be ranked much higher, they have the track record from last year that doesn't say it. I also think preseason polls should be abolished, so there is no such thing as a ranked team in week two, but that's a different conversation. But if Texas can still draw, just remember, like, we are the Joneses. If football does what it needs to do, and you don't have to judge the whole season by next week, but get out there, support it, make sure you find a place to watch this game if you can't be there in person, and see where this team is, but don't base everything on where this team is against the best defense in the country, two of the Heisman favorites on each side of the ball, right? Like, it's a really good team. And Texas is a team that is young and growing. And, man, they might just do something stupid. But both Big Noon Saturday crew and the ESPN College Game Day crew are going to be there. That just tells you something. All eyes in the world are on Texas, waiting to see, are they back? And honestly, for most of them, probably hoping, praying, and dreaming that they aren't. They hate us. And they're not ready for us to be back.
Remember, kids, the reason why they make fun of Texas being back is because they're scared of Texas being back. And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We will be back on Thursday previewing this matchup against the Alabama Crimson Tide. You don't want to miss it. And we'll be back on Saturday. I'll be back. Kyle's going to be in Austin, but I'll be back for a post-game live stream with a special guest on Saturday to recap that one for you. Thank you so much for tuning in again. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Hawk, yeah.